Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time again, another episode of Sports Card Live. We take a magnifying glass to the sports card industry. News, reviews, thoughts, the occasional tangents, and free stuff. Hosted by Dan Rage, Ryan, and Doug Fresh. Boom!
Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. It has been a long time. There's a lot to talk about. We're going to try to squeeze it in this hour and a half, 2 hours worth of show. Since we haven't been on, Bubba Watson has won a Masters. Kaepernick was allegedly named in a sexual abuse case, and Alden Smith had a bomb in the airport. Craziness. Plus, there's also releases that came out that we're going to talk about. 2014 Museum Baseball, 2013 National Treasures, Leaf Unopened, Court Kings, and we'll talk a little soccer prism and all kinds of stuff we got on the docket today. Dan, what is going on?
Chilling. What's up? Yeah, what is up with your 49ers? I mean, are they they're trying to be the Bengals of like 5 or 6 years ago? Just a bunch of troublemakers.
Seriously, man. I mean, I think there's been 9 arrests in the last year or two, and they rank the highest among NFL teams. So, you know, as a season ticket holder, and you are as well, and actually Ryan, who's about to pop on here, is one too. It's a little scary. Let's get our act together, and you know, let's try to win that championship next year. I don't know. Let's get our head in the game.
I'm not scared. I wouldn't be scared. I'm not scared. I'm not worried about it. I mean, they can go 0-16 for all I care. I'd be stoked with that. I don't care if I'm a season ticket holder. I mean, we know my love for the 49ers is true and deep. I mean, that's cool. But Alden Smith will probably. I don't think he's going to play this year. I would not be surprised if he does play. I'm pretty sure he's not going to be playing for the 49ers.
He's a genius. I mean, that's a smart. Such a smart technique to, go through airport security and sarcastically say, I have a bomb. I suggest any of you guys out there listening to go try it yourself and see what kind of results you have. It's genius.
It's not a good idea.
No? No, it's not a good idea?
Not a good idea at all.
I was, well, I was thinking about next time I get on a plane, which I fly a couple times a year, is like, maybe I'll say I have a bomb. I'll see what happens.
I think you can get in trouble for saying bomb and airplane in the same sentence on the radio as well. So we may want to segue that to something else before we all get in trouble.
This show is the bomb diggity. That's the context I was saying it in. So if anybody is listening in, FBI agents kicking in the door over here, wondering what all these cards are, I'm gonna open them all up. Like, where's that guy?
I know. We were actually talking before the show started. You have this Johnny Manziel and Leaf eBay deal going on.
Well, I don't personally, but I mean, it's
no, not you. No, I know
say.
You. I know you don't, but you had something you were going to talk about, and it sounded pretty intriguing. So I don't know if you actually wanted to jump into that now or
yeah, perfect
teaser.
Segue from U.S. airline bomb to Johnny Manziel. Leaf predictor cards. Yes, actually, what they're doing is Leaf trading cards selling on eBay. Leaf trading cards has an eBay account. And you can buy this Johnny Manziel predictor pack for $9.99. I think it includes free shipping. I bought 5 of them. They'll probably be dispersed in breaks coming up. But basically, it's a card that has Johnny Manziel on one of the 32 football teams. So you could, it's not licensed. So it's basically going to say Washington, San Francisco, Arizona, St. Louis, all the teams are going to be on the side. At least that's what it looks like in the photo. And basically it's a draft predictor card. So if he gets drafted by one of those teams, then you redeem that particular card for an autograph. So say he gets picked by the Texans or the Browns, and they're limited to 41 copies per team. So 41 lucky people out of the I think I did the math earlier. 41 people out of the 32 out of the 410 or something like that. No, my math is off. But anyways, 41 lucky people will get a Johnny Manziel autograph once he gets drafted by that particular team.
You know what? It would have been a good idea if he would have picked, like, 10 of the top prospects, 10 of the top, like, probably the top 10, top 15, and do a pack with just randomly inserted rookies and kind of do the same thing and make a whole, like, set out of it instead of, like, picking just one guy. That would have been cool. Because not everybody's a big Johnny Manziel fan. Not everybody's going to buy into it. Are you just getting one card in the pack?
Correct.
Just one card. No filler, no nothing else. Just and everything is numbered to 41?
I don't know if they're actually numbered, but yes, there's 41 per team apparently.
Okay. So
there's
even if they're
13,
not numbered on the back, they're still
41. Yeah, I haven't seen a picture of the back, but yeah, it's so basically there's 1,312 of these cards made. Now that I got my calculator up, because I tried to do it in my head, and obviously that didn't work. My numbers were way off. So times $9.99, I mean, you got to throw in some eBay fees there. So basically, Leaf has got it's about $13,000 they're taking from this Manziel promotion, assuming they sell all the cards. So, and who knows? I mean, you could get a Washington. Let's just pick a team he's not going to get drafted by. Probably not going to get drafted by the 49ers. So if you get a San Francisco Manziel card, is that card going to hold its value like 15 years down the line? Is it going to be like, what is this card?
Good point. I don't know.
It's like maybe somebody will sell it as like an eBay one-of-one error card.
I mean, we pretty much have it down to where it's going to be like four or five teams. I mean, you got the Texans, you got the Browns, you got the Jags, the Raiders. I mean, am I missing anybody else?
That's pretty much it. I mean, I don't know. You could throw the Buccaneers in there with the second pick. I doubt it with Glennon, but maybe they load up on him. You know, I don't know. The Rams. The Rams need a quarterback, and they might take him.
If the Rams are gonna draft a quarterback, it's not gonna be with the second pick overall.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would draft Johnny Manziel. I think they would go for like a Blake Bortles or somebody, probably not a Teddy Bridgewater, but maybe Blake Bortles.
Does he have a part in his hair like Sam Bradford? Because then it would work. That's probably what they go after, right? When the Rams would sit in a draft room, they think which guy has the best part in his hair, and that's who we're going to go after.
Yeah, but he's a stand-up guy. You don't see him getting in trouble. Just saying.
No, well, you can't really get in trouble when you're just constantly rehabbing from injuries. You don't have time.
That's nice.
What's up, Ryan?
What's up?
What's
all right,
up,
man? What do you think about this Leaf Johnny Manziel thing? What do you think about the idea and the selling on eBay?
Well, it's a good way to make money without having to sell any packs, I guess. I don't know. We'll have to see if people buy them. Seems like 41 is a limited number. Do you get to pick the – so you can buy the Raiders or whatever? It's not random?
No.
It's not like a random –
No, it's random. You get one pack, and then it could be any team in there.
Oh, I see. Well, that's
so. There's
for
really
10
only
bucks,
five.
I mean, I don't know.
There's really only four or five teams that you can get that have a chance of drafting them. But it's a good point that Doug made. I mean, is a 49ers Johnny Manziel card gonna like limited print run gonna be worth anything? It's, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's probably worth $10.
Maybe $10.
What you paid for it?
Yeah, it basically it has a city in the background. Actually, that's pretty cool. It actually has every city has a monument in the background. Kind of, I think you guys were just talking about that on the chat about Spectra. It's kind of like what they should have did with Spectra, where they actually have the city in the background. So I'm looking at the pictures here. So San Francisco has the Golden Gate Bridge. St. Louis has that dumb arch that you guys have. Got Dallas with a, you know, I don't know the monuments in these different cities, but they got all the Arizona's got like the Grand Canyon or some kind of thing. Yeah, so it's like everything has a state. I sound real smart, don't I? Every team has their kind of, you know, monument for their state. So we'll see.
Product of public school right there. That was I like that.
Although, yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. That was
got a cactus and a bunch of hot chicks just roaming around.
Frisco's got some kind of dumb bridge in the background stuff. So yeah, we'll
nice.
See. It looks like actually it says on eBay 287 have sold already. I don't know when they posted this, but it says more than 10 available and 287 have sold. So oh wow, I can actually see people. Somebody bought 20. One person bought 20. A lot of people bought one, four, five.
That was me. I bought 20. I just want to get. I want to get the Johnny Manziel Rams card.
Nice. You know,
sweet.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see. I'll let you guys know when we get one. I'll definitely open up one for us and kind of look at it and, you know, let you guys know what it looks like. And the other ones will probably be in a break since they have the teams on, and we'll throw them in a break and. Whoever has that team will get that Johnny Manziel card, so that'd be pretty cool.
Sweet. Giants-Dodgers tonight, right?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. Yes, sir. Let's see how that goes.
Tim Lincecum beat him already.
Tim Lincecum in his mustache.
Oh, Lincecum's pitching?
I think so, yeah. Yep.
It's over.
Rachel Maddow.
At least Goldschmidt's not on the Dodgers.
Might have a chance there. Actually, he has a surprisingly really good record against the Dodgers. I think he's got like a 2 ERA, shockingly. So.
Wow.
But I wanted to get into I want to talk about Tanaka because there's a lot of speculation about what product he's going to be in. We've already pretty much ruled out Masahiro Tanaka being in Bowman when it comes out. Not going to be in there. He came out in Gypsy Queen, and his SPs are selling pretty well. Want to know, what do you think? I mean, do we think one of these companies is going to sign him to exclusive? Is he too much? He's 1-0 with 18 strikeouts in two games. So far, I don't want to say he's a real deal yet, but he's as real of a deal right now as he could be in two games. So, I mean, what do you think? Where is he going to land, and what products do you think he's going to come out in?
A 2016 Topps Tribute. Oh, you want a serious answer?
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, he wants to get paid. I mean, does Topps have the money to give him $150 an auto? I don't, probably not. It's a lot of money. If they do sign him to a deal, I don't think it's going to be it's going to be late in the releases. They may do some mystery redemptions once they actually sign him to a deal and start pumping those out, but I don't think you're going to see a live auto until next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean I have a feeling there's people talking about it on the forums that Panini's trying to, you know, baseball sales have been down for Panini since National Treasures came out, and they're desperately trying to get him to an exclusive. That's what I heard. It could be wrong. That may not be good for the hobby as far as getting Tanaka on an unlicensed card.
Yeah, but, I mean, even if they signed him right now, they signed him to a deal right now, you would not see him in a product until, I mean, I would say at least 6 months. I mean, you're right in the middle of baseball season. Is he going to, like, basically take time out of his schedule here to sign cards? I don't think so. I think the window of opportunity of having him sign and get him in products is past. I think if we see him in products, it's going to be later on, maybe even after the season.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking they're going to get him in his redemptions. Like, I think Bowman Chrome is going to need him in there because they've already used – Abreu, Appel, and Bryant, what is Bowman Chrome gonna? Bowman Chrome's gonna need a push. It's gonna need that name to sell Bowman Chrome. I mean, they're already selling a lot of Bowman Chrome. Everybody's pre-selling it, but Bowman Chrome is that like forgotten about product because you got draft picks and prospects that always does well, and then you have Bowman that does well because they kind of cut the draft in half and split them between those two products. Now Chrome, it's like they get all the guys from overseas and stuff like that. They kind of signed late in the season, so I don't know. I'm thinking they might get him in Chrome if they're gonna get him, but. He may be asking too much. They may not want to pay that much. But if he continues this start, they're going to have to do something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm with you guys in the chat. I don't really care much about Tanaka. I don't watch much Yankees games. But, I mean, I just could imagine this first auto of Tanaka coming out and being a $400 or $500 card. So yeah, that's why the speculation is there. You know, you pull one of those out of a pack. And
shoot, came up.
You know, right on eBay there.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of like the same deal we dealt with Puig last year where he was a redemption pretty much in every product, and you didn't see a live auto until when? When was Puig's first live auto in a product that was not a redemption?
I think it was Bowman Chrome, and it was limited. I think they had half redemption still.
So, I mean, and that's fairly late in the releases.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's 4 months away for Chrome, so we'll see. You know, I quickly kind of sorted some of the stats early on, the rookies this year. Jose Abreu is really kind of living up to the hype right now. He's got 4 home runs, 14 RBIs, and 13 games so far. Batting .255, so, you know, not killing it on the average, but the 4 home runs is by far the most out of any rookie so far, so... Seems like kid's a real deal, and he's going to have some hype behind his autos in 2014 Bowman.
I think he's the guy to collect.
Yeah.
He's going to be a good player.
Yeah, and that is true. In the chat, the mystery redemption thing was handled really weird from Tribute because they had Tanaka and Abreu on the checklist as autos. Everybody thought 1 and 2 was going to be Tanaka and Abreu. And then number 2 is Abreu, but number 1 is Hank Aaron. So riddle me that. So that's one of the things that makes me think that this guy wants freaking $1 million in auto, and he's not willing to back down or lower his price.
That's weird. I didn't know number 1 was Hank Aaron.
Yeah,
I thought number one was Abreu. They got a fair amount of and those were going for like. Were those mystery redemptions going for like $600-$700?
Yep.
Woo.
Crazy, man.
For a,
That's a lot of change right there.
For a Hank Aaron auto, that's probably like $40, huh?
Well, they're numbered. I think the highest it could be is 99. So if you get a Hank Aaron on-card auto number to 99, I don't know what set design they're going to use. But, I mean, you're looking at maybe $100 for the number to 99. If it gets all the way down to the red, maybe you're looking at 300, which is number to 25, I think. So, maybe. Right. But, yeah, obviously somebody took a big loss on the number ones that they bought early.
Woo.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that's – damn. Well.
Yeah, that's a lot of change, man. That is a lot.
I remember seeing them up on eBay for $1,000 or best offer. I don't know if people were actually getting that, but
yeah. Well, I could probably pull up the completed listings, but early guys that are doing well. I have Xander Bogaerts, and definitely not flying under the radar, but he's batting .283. Jackie Bradley batting .273. Man, Ryan, your boy Billy Hamilton batting .143 with 2 stolen bases so far. Got a little bit of a slow start so far.
A little bit. He'll be all right.
Yeah, I think he's just – somebody's got to work with him down there on his hitting, man. I think he's just too concerned about getting on base and stealing. He's like, let's work on your hitting. Let's get you up to speed.
What's his average again?
143.
It's a loud 143, I bet, though.
He's only 48 at bats, so I mean, guys can go through slumps early on. And 48 at bats, he's got, or 42 at bats, he's got 6 hits. So he's got a double, a triple, and 1 RBI. So I mean, out of those he got a triple. I heard he did like a sacrifice fly where he was on second and he scored or something like that. So definitely got the frickin' wheels.
No, it was a pop-up to second base. Like a little, I mean, it was probably like, I don't know. It was a little bit past second base, and he scored on a sacrifice fly from third.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened. But, he's got – there's no doubt he's got wheels. He just got – he has to be able to just to – I mean, the smart thing to do would be to show him how to bunt. The wheels that he has, if he just learned how to bunt, he can probably – I mean, he'd probably get a hit a game. He could be a 250 hitter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that'll draw the infield in, and if the third baseman's, like, practically standing on top of him, better chance of getting a hit there.
Absolutely. So, and from a pitching standpoint, I was actually just about to talk about that, Donovan. Yordano Ventura pitched one game so far, had six strikeouts, only two hits, and no one earned runs, and got the had to have gotten a win, I take it. Yeah, no decision. Wow, he must have lost. But he didn't give up any runs, only two hits in his start for Kansas City, so looks pretty promising. I think he was in 2013, Bowman, one of those, I think, draft maybe. So good guy to get. Probably people have already caught on. Looking at the rookies here.
I think he's in Sterling too, right?
Yes, he is. He's in Sterling as well.
He's in 2013 Sterling.
Trying to pull him up here, see what you can get his stuff for. Yeah, he's in Sterling. He's in Bowman Chrome. So he's one of the guys at Bowman Chrome. Looks like people are getting around $23, $24 for his on-card Chrome auto. So that's not too bad. He's also in Inception, and that looks like it so far. So he's in three. Oh, no, he's also in Bowman Platinum as well. So that brings up another question that I actually wrote on the show notes here. Obviously, the first Bowman on-card auto is the one that you want. We see it time and time again. I mean, Orange Trout selling for $2,000 right now. So what is the hierarchy of these products? After Bowman, what is the next product that you would want an auto out of, you know, your guy? Is it Bowman Platinum? Is it Bowman Sterling? Is it Topps Chrome? Which, I mean, you could see the price disparity from their first Bowman auto down to their Topps Chrome rookie or their Bowman Platinum auto, their Bowman Sterling auto. So what do you think, Dan? What's the hierarchy of products when it comes to these baseball
prospects?
See,
personally, with what I like in the design, I like Finest.
Yeah.
So I would personally go after a Finest auto. Usually, I mean, they're on card. I mean, I don't know, a little bit more limited number, I guess. I mean, they do make a lot of it, but you only get one on card auto usually per box. I would say Finest. That's what I would go after. But number one, obviously, would be any Chrome auto, like a draft picks and prospects, something like that. Bowman regular, but I would personally go with Finest.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it seems like especially now. I mean, because the 2009 Bowman Sterling Trout cards still sell well, so that's a year of Sterling that did well. But if you look at this, like 2012. 2013 Sterling, there's a big discrepancy in like the Correas and the Buxtons compared to the Chrome versions of them. They're both on card. They have the same numbering. Why so? The collector obviously likes the Chrome versions more. Why such a big discrepancy? I mean, sometimes they're a tenth of the price. You can get a Bowman Chrome auto of Correa, it's like $200. You can get a Sterling auto of Correa for $20.
18 autos per box as opposed to one auto per box.
But it's such a higher price point, too, though. It should be a $300 box as opposed to a $60 box.
True, but I don't know. I mean, later, usually Sterling comes late in the season, too. So there's probably been like 7, 8, 9, 10 releases since Chrome and Sterling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of options to choose from at that point.
So, like, Ryan, I know you do a lot of FOMC stuff. Is there any particular, when you're dealing with prospects, is there one set that, you know, let's throw out Bowman Chrome. Is there one set that you could see, you know, Sterling, Finest, that you would buy and be able to flip and make a couple bucks on?
It would just depend on the guy and the type of price you're getting. like you said, sometimes you see that Sterling sell for cheaper. Some of the Bowen Platinum stuff gets real cheap. You know, that is interesting that there's such a big discrepancy. If I were a collector or just somebody out there and I was interested in a prospect, to me, I would maybe steer toward the cheaper cards and maybe get a couple of them instead of the one Bowman. You're spreading out your risk a little bit. Some of these guys' autographs are worth $100-some-odd, and they're never, you know, Carlos Correa could end up being a pretty good player, but not be an all-time great. So, really, the prices are set on a lot of times the draft position or how much bonus money they got or how much hype they have or if they play on the Yankees or the Red Sox or something. It always kind of amazes me, you know, when I see a guy's cards blow up and because he was playing in rookie league and got 15 home runs, you know what I mean? And I don't know. For me, I would go for the cheaper stuff. Some of the Sterling stuff is nice. I thought last year it was harder to see some of the autographs on the cards. I don't know. That was just me. It was just a weird from the background and then the autograph. It was just harder to see. The Bowman stuff is so clean. The Topps Chrome stuff is just so clean and so kind of nice. So I could see why people kind of gear toward those sets. And the history of those sets have been around for with the autographs in them for over 15 years now, it seems like. So going back to like Pujols, I think 2001 or something, it's got to be worth several thousand bucks. So, I don't know. For check out my cards, it's really you just got to get the best deal. It's all about the best deal. Sometimes people are blowing out, some of the cheaper prospect autographs for less than $1 or $1.50 or something. And there's some room there if they're just a decent prospect, you might be able to turn around and sell them for double or make 75 cents or something like that.
Yeah, because it's just a crap. And then you can even throw in, you could say five-star. That's obviously five cards for $350, $400. And those don't even hold the jock of the Bowman draft. I mean, not even, it's like a tenth of a percent. It's like 10% cheaper or for a tenth of the price. I can't even talk. It's crazy. It's and then it gets to the point where are we muddling these down? So everybody wants the Bowman draft, the Bowman Chrome ones, but do we really need him in 15 releases after that? And that's where it kind of gets tricky on where you're going to pick your spots to purchase these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the lesser players too, because the lesser players are going to sign a lot. Whereas somebody like Correa, he's going to be limited in Bowman. He's going to be limited maybe a little bit in Sterling. Buxton isn't going to sign a whole lot. But, just somebody that I'm seeing right now, Billy McKinney, who's an A's prospect. I mean, this kid will probably sign anything you put in front of him. So, and his stuff's not worth very much. His autograph's worth $5 or $10, maybe less than that. So it just all depends on the guy and maybe what team he's on, what type of financial situation he's in. Any of the top, 1, 2, 3 pick, they got a huge bonus usually. They've got probably some other money coming in. And, maybe they think their autograph's worth more than it really – I still can't believe somebody like Carlos Correa signs, his autograph sell for over $100. You know what I mean? I don't know what he's getting in Double A this year, but it's just – it's insane. On top of the fact that he plays for the Houston Astros, who, are not very good and – don't project to be good, even if he came up and started doing stuff. So I don't know what's the price difference between Correa and George Springer, another prospect on their team. George Springer might sell for a third of what Carlos Correa does, only because Correa was the number one pick. So I'm kind of baffled by card collectors that they are so set on letting the draft and letting that dictate these card prices. When in reality, you should be kind of looking at these players and what's their skill set, what are the odds of them going on and having a good career. And usually that is very, very slim, very, very slim, even for top prospects. Usually their cards go down in value at the end of the day.
Right.
Very few guys end up, like Trout. Like Pujols to an extent, whose cards were cheaper and then blew up as he got better. So, it's tough. I wouldn't want to be buying Correa or Buxton cards at the price they're at. That's for sure.
Right.
Not right now.
Yeah.
So how many guys who were the number one overall pick? How many of those guys are in the Hall of Fame?
Not anybody yet.
There's zero.
Griffey will be the first.
Griffey will be the first. Chipper Jones, he was the first overall pick. He'll go to the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, look how many of these number one overall picks turn out to be decent players, but not Hall of Fame caliber players. I mean, that's two out of the whole time we've been drafting. I mean, I think, when did the draft start? It was like early 70s?
1965.
65, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I
brought up the list. I mean, obviously this year was Mark Appel. Last year was Carlos Correa. The year before was Garrett Cole. Then you got Harper, Strasburg. 2008, you got Tim Beckham. I mean, what happened to Tim Beckham? Obviously never made it up. So Tim Beckham, David Price, 2007. Okay, he's solid. Luke Hochevar for the Royals made a couple starts.
Yeah.
Big. Justin Upton, 2005. I mean, he's Diamondbacks. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's a decent player. He's an All-Star.
Braves now.
Braves now, yeah, Diamondbacks then. Yeah. Matt Bush, 2004 for the Padres. Delmon Young, 2003.
Hall of Famer right now. Just book him. Book him now.
Here's a guy, 2002, Brian Bullington. Who? Yeah.
Yeah.
2001, Joe Mauer. 2000, Adrian Gonzalez. 1999, Josh Hamilton. 1998, Pat Burrell. I mean, he was a solid player, but obviously not a Hall of Famer. Chris Benson, 96. I mean, you go back, 93, A-Rod. You know, he probably won't make it to the Hall, even though he probably should based on his stats, but he probably won't because of his roids.
1991, Brian Taylor.
Yep, Brian Taylor for the Yankees. Brian with an I-E-N, Brian Taylor.
Yeah.
Chipper Jones, 1990, Chipper Jones. So that's one who's going to be in the Hall. 1989, Ben McDonald. I remember him as a kid. That was a huge card to get, Ben McDonald, in 1989. Andy Bennis for the Padres in 1988. Was an All-Star, but obviously
he
not a Hall of Famer. He's
a good player.
Ken Griffey in 87. So Ken Griffey, so you fast forward, you back 2013 to 1987, you got one Hall of Famer, one Hall of Fame lock.
Well, you got Chipper Jones is a lock.
Yeah, two locks. You got Griffey and Chipper Jones.
But you look at the rest of those guys and good players, All-Star type players, but none of them are all-time greats. Adrian Gonzalez is not an all-time great. Ben McDonald's not an all-time great. Pat Burrell was an all-time great at, like, Bellarmine High School, I think, but not in the pros.
Yeah.
I don't know. You can't look where somebody is drafted and just, I mean, because look how many guys get drafted in the 7th, 10th, 12th, 13th round, and they end up becoming Hall of Fame caliber players. Baseball is just too many different variables. It's hard. And plus, there's so many different rounds. There's so many different guys that get drafted. It's insane. So you can't look at the draft position.
Basically, over the last 10 years, just to say, and I know that it's every year there's different with Bowman Chrome, but let's just say there was 30 autograph subjects and there was three sets every year. That's 900 different guys in 10 years, and you're probably only three of them are going to be Hall of Famers out of that draft.
Yeah, I mean, that's Hall of Famers. That's not saying they're not going to be good players. That's not saying they're not going to be all-star caliber players. But, yeah, it's hard to be a Hall of Fame player.
It is. Well, it's hard enough to make a baseball team with, you know, nine positions and then all the pitching spots, 25-man roster. That's hard enough. You got to take somebody's job. You got to hope somebody retires. I mean, it's tough. So that's what makes prospecting fun. That's the chase. That's the stock that you're holding on to this guy. When do I sell? Do I sell Correa now? He's at 150, or is he going to go up? Is he going to go down? Do I sell now? I mean, it's like I have a Max Fried I've been collecting, a pitcher for the Padres. His stock was way up at spring training, and now he has Tommy John. So I could have sold it during spring training. I have a gold auto of him. It was going for like $200-$250. I could have sold it, but now I can't get 99 for it. So it's like you got to wait for him to come back, Tommy John. And so it's all these different variables, but it's definitely the fun part of collecting and prospecting. And with 2014 Bowman right around the corner, it's going to be fun. Chris Bryant, they say he's one of the most for sure things. You know, I mean, they say that about a lot of guys, but they're saying he's almost big league ready already. He was just drafted. So, I mean, he's going to be – people are going to be just going crazy over Bowman just because of him. And then you throw Abreu in the mix. Mikel Franco's in there. So those are, and Mark Appel. So there's four really solid guys on that checklist, and I think Bowman's going to pop.
Yeah, I think Bowman's going to be good. I think out of all those guys, Abreu, I mean, he's already playing, obviously, but that kid's going to be good. And Chris Bryant, I mean, that kid, from what I've seen so far, he's a beast. He's got power. So I know it was Jameson Tan. He's having Tommy John surgery. Didn't Garrett Cole as well? Or is he
I don't know about Garrett Cole. I know that Matt Moore got shut down for the season too.
Yeah, I know Matt Moore. I thought Garrett Cole, but maybe not. I know Jameson Tan for sure, and he top prospect, Tommy John surgery. I mean, it's crazy with all these pitchers having to have Tommy John surgery. It's like, I mean, there's like a new guy every week.
Well, I think that, you know, I was listening to an interview with Mitch Williams, the Wild Thing, and he was saying a lot of these guys, they try to develop these pitches, like they try to add a curveball to their repertoire, and their arm motion just does not, it's not, some guys can't throw curves, and you can't change your body, your arm angle to throw a curve, and that's what happened. A lot of these guys try to add another pitch just to be competitive, and you know, they may even want to get called up, and that's why they're doing it, but a lot of these guys are doing unnatural stuff with their arms, and it's just, you know, it's contributing to more Tommy Johns, and they're not watching their pitch count, or they're throwing too hard, or, you know, it's crazy. Your arm motion is not supposed to throw 100 times in one night at the hardest it can, so.
Or they're teaching kids a curveball at 9 years old.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm out of shape. I used to play baseball. I used to pitch a little bit. I mean, I went to one of those, you know, guess your speed things. I freaking throw it as hard as I could, and my arm was just tingling. Like, I could not do that 100 times. Obviously, these guys are in more shape, better shape than I am, but, you know, it's just crazy when your arm throws something that fast, and it's not meant to do that 100 times a game.
Yeah.
That's why you see the knuckleballer guys that throw 70 miles an hour and can pitch to their 50, like Tim Wakefield.
Like R.A. Dickey.
Like R.A. Dickey, yeah, exactly.
Like Charlie Huff.
So, but, yep, Bowman right around the corner. That's exciting. I wanted to get into a – talk about a product that came out. It's kind of different. 2013 Leaf Unopened Football, Best of Football Edition. What are your thoughts on the product, Dan?
Loudest rapping ever. Like, the shrink wrapping is ridiculous. Super loud. But I don't, you know, honestly, I thought it was actually a pretty innovative idea. I don't know the legalities of it. I don't know how you can repackage another company's sealed box and then sell it as your own. I'm not sure how, I mean, obviously Brian's a smart guy and he was able to figure it out. But I wish there was a lot less 2013 in the product run. It seems I think we've opened like three or four cases. I've seen a couple of cases online, and it seems like you're guaranteed one, two, maybe even three 2013 products. That's my only
right.
downfall. But I actually think it's pretty innovative. I like it. It's a buyback product, but it's kind of thinking outside the box a little bit. I mean, it's not your standard buyback product. Get a little bit more
for those
excitement.
Of
you get to open something.
For those of you that are not familiar with the product, basically it's a Leaf repackaged a product anywhere from 1998 up to now. Actually, I think it even goes far back as 1991 Stadium Club because I've seen that on the sell sheet. So anywhere from 1991 up to 2013, it's in a box, and there's a cut auto as well, and that's in a little bubble mailer. And then you get a randomly chosen, selected box of football cards from any one of those years. So it could be – and the chases are the 2005 exquisite with the Aaron Rodgers, the 2012 National Treasures where you could get the luck. So it's a sealed, factory-sealed box from either Panini or Topps or Upper Deck. So it's an interesting idea. But my constructive criticism with it is I don't think you can call it best of football when you have 2013 products, at least some of the 2013 products that weren't the best, like Platinum and
Momentum
and Spectra and stuff like that. I don't think that was definitely not the best of football. That's my constructive criticism to it.
Have you seen Spectra in there?
I got word from a distributor that Brian bought like 50 cases of Spectra, so I'm assuming they're in there.
Oh. That answers that, doesn't it?
So, I don't know.
Sounds like there's a whole lot of it.
Right. Or maybe he likes Spectra. Maybe he bought it for himself. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe somebody else needed it.
Big fan.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so am I. I thought Spectra wasn't bad. I don't know. I mean, that's my only downfall is the, and I know everybody knows why there's 2013 in the product.
Yes.
You know that stuff didn't go up readily available. Definitely keep the cost down so you can put in some higher end products, but I just haven't seen those higher-end products come out.
Right, and he's got to make money. He's not going to make – I mean, it's a $170 price point. He's got $500 boxes in there. So, you know, there's got to be an equilibrium in a sense where he's got to make money on it. I think, you know, if I was to do it, I'd probably make it a $200, $250 price point, put a little bit better boxes. But to his credit, he's never done anything like this, so he probably tried to keep it as low of a price point as he could. He didn't want to, you know, put it out of the gates at $250 and then no one buys it. So he probably tried to keep it, you know, $150, $170 so that it's a fair value all the way around. So it's tricky.
I mean, I like the added value. I had no idea he was doing cut autos in every box.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little bit added value to it. Makes it a little easier to swallow your 2013 Platinum box a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's
takes a little
I mean, I just,
off of it.
It does. I mean, and there's some decent cut autos. I pulled a Drew Brees yesterday, so there's some decent stuff in there.
You pulled a Drew Brees cut auto?
Yeah, I did, and you know what the weird thing was? Is it was Drew Brees number 15. So
it
was
sure?
Like a...
Sure, it was the same
Drew Brees? I'm absolutely, well, there could be another Drew Brees out there that I'm not aware of. That's the number he wore in college. So obviously this auto had been sitting somewhere for a while. So it was which actually may make it more valuable. Who knows?
Now I'm curious, when you pulled that Drew Brees cut auto, what was the box in the box?
Ooh, 2012 certified. Totally certified.
That's not – I mean, 2012 isn't bad.
No, it's about a $140 retail box. So you would think that they would correlate, like, if you get a really crappy box, you get a really good cut auto maybe, but I don't think it works that way. I think it was just randomly placed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best cut auto I've seen in the two cases I've opened was a Sammy Baugh cut auto. Everything else has been – you know, the YA Tittles and, like, the, you know, the standard guys that he usually throws in all his products.
Well, here's an idea for you. You know how big the Jordan shoe market is. What if you did a best of Jordan shoe collection and you just bought, like, different sets of Jordans and you wrapped them up and you made it a mix? Is that legal, Ryan? Can we do that?
Probably, yeah, I guess. Don't quote me, but maybe.
You do it with one shoe in each box. So then you gotta search around and buy the other, like the left one. Like if you have the right one, you need to get the left one the same.
Well, I was going to say, that's a hell of
an
idea. I mean, I've actually been looking for Jordan 11s because I just love the design. I just want to buy, so I can't get one for under, even the ones that were re-released. So, like, the stuff that were released in 2011, I can't even buy one that were worn for, like, less than $250. So you could probably get Jordan to sign a few of them and then just, like, repackage these shoes. That would be, dude, I need to stop recording because I think somebody's going to take this idea.
I like my idea of splitting them up. It adds value. It gives more to the chase. And plus you have to get the right size. You can do a lot of trading with people.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
That's true. I guess the size is involved with throwing it off. Because yeah, if I got like a size 7, wouldn't do me any good except for putting it on my mantle. Oh. Toddler Jordan, man, you got the worst box. You got the toddler edition. Toddler edition. Damn. So, but yeah, that is a good question too. We weren't absolutely sure that the unopened is legal either. I mean, I know California has a very strict grab bag law, and this, I mean, I know Leaf's not in California, but the grab bag law that I've read kind of specifically describes what this product is. But maybe by throwing in the cut auto, that makes it okay, or maybe the Texas law is different than California law. But California law specifically outlines that you can't take a product and then of somebody else's and then repackage it and then sell it for a certain price. So I think
yeah,
I don't know.
Because it is a set price that he's charging for it. And
yeah.
I mean theoretically I don't know. I mean, is he doing the whole it doesn't say anything about like you're buying a cut auto and you're getting a randomly inserted box in the box. I don't know.
Yeah.
I
got a box right
know.
Here. I mean, the only thing it says, Leaf guarantees the authenticity of each of these cut signature cards. No organization, league, licensee, agency has been approved or endorsed the use of these cut signatures. Any redemption cards found within the buyback seal boxes are solely the responsibility of the original manufacturer. That's kind of interesting. So they're saying, like, don't help, which rightfully so. They're like, man, Brian, I opened your Leaf Unopened and I got a redemption from 2007. What are you going to do for me?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, I know Brian is always, from what I could tell on Cardboard Connections blog, is that, legal battles and stuff. I'm sure he's got a lawyer on the team. He asked him about it. So I don't know. I would think he would do his due diligence to make sure that he could do that.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. I think he did his due diligence and he figured it out. I don't think he would jeopardize his company and his brand to basically do a product that's repackaging other people's products. I think he knows that it's illegal and he did it. I look at it. I'm not a lawyer. To me, it looks like there's definitely gray area. And this industry, it's all gray area. It seems like. Everything is a gray area. So, I don't know.
Making me gray, bro. I'm gray now with all this gray area.
I'm already gray.
I mean, Ryan, what do you think? I mean, what do you think about the product in general being legal? I mean, is it something that you think he's already covered his bases on? Or?
Well, you never know with you never know with Brian Gray. You really never know with this industry. I mean, we see things all the time that are questionable at best, whether it's with raffling or even the redemption, even the whole idea of a redemption card that, you wait 2 years for and then they replace it with something else. I mean, I don't, that doesn't sound totally legit either. So,
right.
I just think that nobody gets burned bad enough or nobody wants to go through the whole legal process. And even so, even Brian Gray might have asked a lawyer, and just because his lawyer said, oh, yeah, that's cool, you could do that, doesn't mean that it would stand up in every state or every jurisdiction or, you know what I mean? So just because a lawyer says something is legal or something is not legal, that really doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Because if you get sued, guess what? That lawyer is going to be like, oh, well, yeah, so that'll be $450 an hour and, you know, X, Y, and Z. Sure, we'll look into this further. So I'd be careful about, like, you know, oh, well, Brian Gray talked to his lawyer and he said it was legit. Well, Brian Gray's lawyer could be full of crap. So,
right.
I don't know. I mean, it seems interesting. I would wonder how, like, Topps or Panini would feel about it. I mean, he bought 50 cases of Spectra, so, you know, the distributors probably liked him.
Allegedly.
Allegedly,
right?
Allegedly bought 50 cases. You know, he obviously bought all this stuff somehow, probably through the wholesale channels and stuff. So, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I don't mind it so much. When I heard about the product, it kind of intrigued me. And then you guys said it was kind of lukewarm, and maybe some of the other breaks that have gone on have been a little lukewarm. So I don't really know if it's legal or not. Again, it might be legal in Texas. It might not be legal in California. It might not be legal in Canada. You know, so we don't really know. But I doubt anybody's really gonna take them to task or challenge that, because it just, you know, wouldn't be worth it, because you probably got either burned on a case or a box. And what does a box cost of that, roughly, about?
What, 170-ish retail?
170. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to buy, you know, 100 boxes for it to even really be kind of real money, I guess. So,
and,
I don't know.
And,
it's interesting.
Know,
it's interesting.
It's a very interesting product, and I mean, I will say this: everybody that's, I haven't had any complaints from customers about it. So, you know, maybe it's the card snob and me going, "Oh man, I know how much this box is worth." But maybe to my customer, he hasn't seen a 2011 plates and patches box in, you know, 2 years. So that's cool for, you know, he wouldn't have bought that today. Yeah, he went into a card shop, that box, even though it is only $80 on a wholesale market, he probably wouldn't have chose that box. And then if a hit came out he liked, he's excited. He's not thinking about the price. It's me thinking about the price of the box and what I can get it for. So it's glaringly obvious to us, I guess. So, but from a person that's just, you know, a hobbyist that buys a box here and there, it's a cool idea, because it's what's – not only is it what's behind door number one, what's behind door number two? Because you got two kind of – you don't know what the box is, and then you don't know what's in the box. So it's like double – jeopardy, for lack of a better word and sense. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. I actually, since we're talking about manufacturers, I actually have a good Topps customer service story that actually happened to us.
Share that.
And I was going to talk about it last week, but we didn't do the show last week, but a couple weeks ago, Museum Collection Baseball came out. And we did a case break of it, and we were missing the framed auto, the gold framed auto, on card auto, the case hit, the skated case hit. Didn't get it, and I did the whole deal of UPS, UPC code, case little date code, our receipt, and I put it in a bubble mailer and I sent it off the Topps. And I was like, well, told everybody in the break, we'll do a mail day when we get it, but it could be like 6 to 8 weeks, so don't hold your breath. That's even if we do get a response. So I told everybody, you know, don't get your hopes up that we're going to get something, we're going to get something in a timely manner. But they got a replacement to us in, what was it, a week?
Unbelievable.
I mean, literally, they received it and must have put a framed auto in a bubble mailer and sent it out the same day, because it was about 6 to 7 days when we got a replacement. Unbelievable. Like, unbelievable.
I just gave him a little round of applause.
Was that you clapping? I'm like, what is that sound?
It was either that or me slapping my face. One of the two. It's about the same sound. So it was clapping or slapping my face.
So I got to say, I mean, I know they're making an effort to change their glaring customer service issues. This may be the first step. So, you know, shining a little bit of light on a bad situation.
Yeah, I mean, that was great by them. You know, it's funny that we even bring this up because it's like something that should happen anyway. And it didn't normally happen, and now it does. It's kind of like they set the bar low. So now when they achieve this success, you're like, oh, my God, it's amazing. So not to be a negative Nancy here, but, yeah, maybe that was their strategy. Let's set the bar low on our customer service. So when it improves a little bit, people are going to be so excited and so, you know, befuddled that they got these cards so quick that they're going to go on a radio show and talk about it.
That's great terminology. I use that all the time in all walks of life.
The set the bar? Yeah, I know. I need to work on setting the bar lower and everything myself. I set the bar too high. I set the bar way too high, and then I can't perform on it. I can't over deliver. I underproduce. But anyway, yeah, that's definitely a good story. Definitely a step in the right direction. You know, it's good stuff that they get that, especially in a case that like that. Cause that sucks. I mean, that's the card you're wanting to see out of the 12 box case. That's the card you want, like, and it's not there. So that should take precedent over, you know, an unsigned redemption or something like that. That's a missing case hit should definitely be fulfilled faster. I don't know if there's anything that.
So actually, while we're on this topic, same situation, and this is gonna make the customer service not look as great. But I was getting all the information through Topps customer service like website, like on their website, they have one page that has like, you know, for missing hits, send it to this location, blah, 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 all that stuff. And they have a little chat bar at the bottom where it's like, if you want to talk to a Topps customer service representative, here's your little chat screen. So
wow.
I basically, while I was doing it, I started a conversation, and the person responded back to me. They're like, oh, what can we help you out with? And I'm like, just open some 2014 museum collection, didn't get our framed auto, you know, what's the best recourse of handling the situation?
You think it was automated?
It probably was, but, like, it was just funny that, like, they have the option, and it engages you, like, right off the bat, like, anything we can help you out with, and then it's just, it was silence after I typed that.
Where do you find that? I want to try to chat with them right now.
No, yeah, go to Topps website.
Uh-huh.
And go to, there should be like a customer service tab.
Oh, there you go. Ooh, ah, leave a message. Oh, no, that's not it. No, it's like leave a message and then powered. Oh, our operators are not available at the moment.
Oh, okay, well. They were before, but it was funny because, like, yeah, totally engaged. It had to be automated because they just didn't have, like, an automated answer for the question I put in. Or it was somebody who was all, yeah, I'm going to lunch. I'm going to click this box out, go to lunch. I'm out of here.
You should ask them. They're like, are you a guy or a girl? And it's like, oh, I'm a woman. And they're like, oh, where do you live? You want to go on a date since you like cards? And maybe you can, kind of do like a pickup, you know, thing through there.
Yeah, that's super creepy. I just wanted to get an answer. But
yeah.
No, I mean, but that has to be a new deal because I don't remember going to their website and seeing that little chat box.
Yeah, it's true.
So maybe it's in the trial period, you know, beta period maybe.
Beta. Well, I've got a couple more sets to review, but I'm pretty excited. They actually Panini took one of my ideas. It might have been yours too. I think we talked about it. The Score Hot Rookies that's coming out. I was talking to a distributor that was about to go to a meeting with Panini, and they were asking. They said Score. You know, Panini was talking to us about Score. It looks like it's not going to be good. And I was like, you know what they need to do is they need to make one pack that has 32 base cards, and it has one for each team. We don't need, you know, 50 packs of 10 cards. It's just people don't collect sets. So they basically, that's what they did. So for Hot Rookies, there's going to be a 32-pack that has limited number of base cards, and some of them are numbered to 99 or less. And then there's a pack of inserts, a pack of rookies, and a pack of autographs. So there's four packs, and that's for the 2014 hot rookies that's coming out. So Panini listened, I guess. And they're making a product that I kind of came up with an idea for. So it was probably a ploy to get me to buy more, which I probably will now. But I'm pretty excited about it, that my input helped kind of help design a product. So we'll see.
Yeah, that was definitely your idea. I don't recall talking to anybody ever about that. that had to be your idea.
Okay. Yeah, I we may have talked about it, but and then they're also coming out in Prism Baseball with a refractor that's called Mojo. So
sweet.
It's the Mojo refractor.
You guys get any royalties for that? Like,
yeah, I know. I'm
getting
something
for that.
Are we getting paid? Are we getting, like, for every pack that's sold, we get, like, 3 cents?
Yeah, I think so.
Look that.
Yeah, it's actually, it's Mojo Blue. So it's called the Mojo Blue, and it's, like, numbered to 75.
That's my, blue is my favorite color. I should get a royalty on that, too.
Yeah, it's crazy. They should.
Oh, Mojo Blue,
and then
huh?
And then there's the Mojo Dan. It's numbered to 55. No, just kidding.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's obviously they're going to have, like, autoed versions of the Mojo parallels.
Yeah, I think so. Our cards came in to sign. We got to get them back to them.
Nobody wants my autograph. I'm not. It's all good.
Yeah, yours is like still, Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, I still have like that whole box. I haven't given one away. Like I haven't. I'm like these. I'm just gonna hold on to these.
Oh yeah, we gotta make our book auto, man. And Brian's card with him on the Twitter phone thing, and then mine eating the football, and then I don't know. I think you're showing the football. We gotta have a triple auto booklet 101. Made.
We should. We got to put it in. I mean, I don't want to just, you know, hand it off to anybody. It has to go. It's the chase card for Ryan's buyback product he's doing. I mean, that's like the gem of anybody's PC would be a booklet card of us three.
It would be.
Like in a,
I agree.
It would be. And yeah.
MojoBlue.com sounds like an elderly dating site. Well, I also heard that you acquired some Raz-Uz dice for your product. Now that they, you know, stopped some of the razzing, you were able to grab some of those dice, and that's in your buyback product as well.
Super rare, man. Super rare, man. All that stuff. You know, very, that was very interesting, all that stuff. I guess that was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what the present date. I'm sure, you know, it's kind of funny because one of the things my brother pointed out, this was like almost a year ago when he kind of was talking about razors and stuff. I know he did a podcast about it about a year ago. One of the things he pointed out was you guys should be, the razors, should have their own hosting. They should host their own website and their own streaming service. And I think when Breakers TV got shut down, it's a perfect example of why you don't want to rely on somebody or a service for your business, because it essentially shut the whole thing down for a couple of weeks. I don't know if they've moved on to somewhere else, but you know, they kind of had to scramble to find something because they literally had nothing else to do their little razzes on. So, and they're very kind of up in arms about that. So, you know,
Yeah, I heard the straw that broke the camel's back on that one was, and maybe it was an incident that already had been escalating, but I heard there was somebody razzing cash, and I heard that was the absolute last straw. Like a guy was like,
right.
$20, 10 people, winner gets $200. So,
yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, that might be fun. That might be fun, right? That might be fun. Well, heroin might be fun too at the end of the day. But I mean, let's just That was like, I think, enough for them to go, okay, you know, this is what's next. I mean, are we going to start razzing children? Like, people are going to put 10 children and you're going to razz one off? I'm going to put Johnny in the mail. You got my son. You want him. I mean, is that what it's going to happen?
I like kidneys. I like, yeah. I'm gonna razz off a kidney.
That might be useful in the medical industry. There's always people looking for kidneys.
Probably get a lot for it. I bet you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you could legally do it, you'd get a ton.
I mean, talk about it. 10 spots, $100,000 a spot? Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, look how much those surrogate mothers get for holding babies, like $80,000 or something like that, just to, you know, have a baby for somebody else. You imagine, like, you know, razzing off body parts? I mean, that's a whole other industry. I think we need to trademark that, like bodypartraz.com or something. We'll see if
I don't. I don't know. I think it's mostly like organs that you'd be. I don't know if you'd just be into average body parts, like fingernail clippings or something like that. I don't know if people would be into.
Body part raz. Go, Daddy. It's available. It's available.
Yeah.
For $12.99. I could get the .us, the .net, the .info, the .org, all for $17. Boom.
Book it.
Well, you want to lock it up, though. Yeah, I mean, you want to make sure.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, so, I mean, I haven't really been on Breakers TV for a while. What's going on with the Raz scene?
Well, I mean, Breakers TV is it's just Breakers now. So, from what I could tell, you know, I try to buy a break from like Firehand and stuff like that every once in a while. Actually, just popped on there now. You probably heard the audio, but you know, I don't see any Razes on there. I kind of from blowout forums, I've seen some guys have kind of went on other sites. I don't know which site it is, but I think the technology for streaming sites is becoming more readily available because there's like, you know, when we started looking back in the blog TV days, there seems like there was like two or three sites. Now you can find like 40. So I think the amount of space and the cloud and stuff like that is becoming more readily available and the software is becoming readily available that it's going to – pretty soon you're just going to be able to really host your own stream and have your own chat right through your own computer. You're not going to have to rely on anybody else.
But we've already seen the platform essentially shut them out, all right? Now, at some point, I say at some point because it will happen, PayPal is going to be like, we're done with this. We're going to block everybody's account.
Well,
and then what do you do? Do you start trying to make payments with Bitcoin? I mean, do you start trying to figure out some other kind of currency you can use? Google Wallet.
It's going to take somebody who's not smart to get it shut down. I mean, basically, I mean the way they're doing it now with the phone Razes, where they show a card on their phone, there's probably not that many people taking more than 10 gift payments a night. So, you know, PayPal would really have to, and I'm not backing them up by any means. I'm neutral when I'm describing this, but I'm just thinking from PayPal's standpoint, it's going to raise a red flag if somebody gets 60 gift payments in a night. I don't know. I don't know what their limit is. 100 gift payments in one night? Yeah, then maybe they look into it.
But look, okay, so it's going to be, you're going to have 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 100 payments for $1 or 50 cents for goods. So this person is selling 100, 200 items a night for 50 cents. What is he selling? Inquiring minds would like to know if I was PayPal. I'd be like, what is he selling for 50 cents? And then you have corresponding gift payments for like a penny. I'm not that smart, but I would look at that and go, yeah, something's not right. Something weird is going on here. I'm going to look into this a little bit more. That's like, I know at one point PayPal is going to figure it out.
Well, yeah, they are. I mean, they are going to figure it out.
I mean, what are they making? I mean, they're making, what, 20 cents a transaction? They're not really making enough to justify risking their whole business for people to perform illegal raffles using their currency.
Yeah.
Or their form of currency.
I mean, I mean, at some point these guys are going to have to, and I'm not, they're going to have to start paying PayPal. So, I mean, so for a $10 card, you're paying them 50 cents. I mean, that should be pretty easy enough to do, right? I mean, you just build that in your, so you, it's just like if you're selling it on eBay, but you're actually taking less of a fee. Now I'm giving ideas out, but if you're brassing a card for $10, why don't you just charge $11? That covers your PayPal fee, right? So a guy's not going to get into a card because he has to pay $1 more?
No, but I'm saying that, like, from an outside looking in, say I work at PayPal and my job is to go through a bunch of different transactions and a bunch of different accounts. And
yeah.
At the same, within 1 minute or 2 minutes of each other, or, I mean, what, 1 minute it takes to send 10 different payments that are going to be, what, goods for like 50 cents or a gift for 50 cents. I don't know how they do it, but I think they do gift or goods. Everybody pays gift or goods, and then I think it's gift. And then when you win, you send a goods payment, so they have your address to send you the card.
Right.
If you have 10 transactions for 50 cents in a span of 1 minute, why? What's going on? Like, what are all these 10 transactions?
Are they gifting it for buyer's remorse? Is that why? I mean, I'm just thinking if you find, how they could, you know, pay PayPal at the same time, and then PayPal doesn't catch on to them. Like I said, I'm not condoning it, but I'm just saying if you were trying to do this amongst friends or something, wouldn't you just have them pay the 10 people pay the PayPal fee? And say, are these people worried about, like I said, if you do it as if you don't do it as a gift, then you can't file a claim, right? So is that why they're doing it as gift? I mean, I don't know.
They do it gift, so the person who's razzing the card doesn't get hit with the fees.
But it's like a 30 cent fee on $10, though. That's what I'm saying. Why wouldn't you just pay the fee?
It's
a 30 cent transaction fee, then it's 2%, I think. So it would be like, so if it was a $10 spot, it would be 30 cents plus 10 cents. It would be 40 cents, or it would be 50 cents. So it would be 50 cents on a $10 transaction. Why wouldn't you just pay that?
PayPal charges on a per transaction basis, and then they charge you a percentage after that. So I think it's 20 or 30 cents. It's 20 or 30
right,
cents per transaction.
And then it's like 2.9%. So it'd be like 60 cents per $10 at the most.
Yeah.
I don't
know what to tell you. This is a weird debate. Like, I'm just saying, like, if I worked at PayPal, I would wonder why there's so many payments that are tiny payments within a minute of each other, and then one gift payment after that.
Yes.
Like, I would look at that and go, I need to get to the bottom of this. Where are these coming from? What's the deal? I mean, is PayPal that big to where they're like, we don't look at transactions that are under a dollar?
Yes.
And that might be the case.
Ryan, how many people do you think use PayPal in the United States of America?
A lot. I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I read somewhere where they process like 40 million a day or 80 million a day or something ridiculous. Like a big, huge number. Like just a huge number per day. Mostly from eBay, I'm sure, but you know, other stuff. I think you're right. Why don't they just pay the fee? It seems so cheap to be. We're literally talking about a dollar or two per. It's just so short-sighted. It shows you how dumb these guys are, because if they paid the fee, they really, really wouldn't have a whole lot to worry about. But because they don't pay the fee, they're really opening themselves up here to get caught up in something you know, somehow, some way. And that's kind of the next shoe to drop on them, you know, now that they've got cut off from the Breakers TV service. You know, what happens with the payment processing? And what happens if they get back into breaks? You know, it's one thing if they just want to go raffle these cards on these cell phones. I mean, it's really dorky, too. I mean, it's just to think about it just seems so dorky. But what if they got back into breaks? That's what I don't like, is because I was watching one day, and the guy was trying to raffle off some National Treasures spots.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the guy who owns Breakers TV literally walked into this guy's card shop in Las Vegas, and kind of shut the whole thing down. Said no more raffles. They went and had like a little private meeting, and then lo and behold, they never ended up raffling off those National Treasure spots on Breakers TV. So that's what I don't like, is that, you know, it's one thing to raffle the cards. It's another thing to do the breaks, where you're buying from a distributor and you're kind of representing Topps and Panini in a way when you're selling this stuff. And we've seen how tight, like, Upper Deck is with, I mean, you got to have a store to break Upper Deck stuff.
Right.
You've got to have a store to get, you know, the Hobby Roundtable stuff early, blah, 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 blah. And when push comes to shove, if you know, and that's what worries me, because football is going to be hot. I've already started to see that a little bit. I think the basketball will do pretty well. We'll see what happens with baseball, with Tanaka and some of the other rookies and Bowman and stuff. But that's what worries me, is they maybe get tired of the raffles and then come back over and try to, you know, swoop on the Johnny Manziel love. And I just don't think they should be allowed to do anything unless they want to go off in a little corner and do their little raffles on whatever website they're on some other streaming service. So,
right.
Hopefully, you know, like you said, though, don't do gift payments. Just do good.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
20
right?
cents. Like, how cheap can you, like, are these guys that broke? Like, wow, like, you're really trying to save $2? Like, damn, like, come on. You know,
well, and also another thing that even if you were paying the fee, would PayPal? I mean, so obviously these payments are coming directly from PayPal, so somebody's not going to somebody's website. So I wonder if there's a red flag of like somebody getting, even if you got 100 payments in one night of $10, would PayPal go, well, this guy doesn't even have a storefront like website? Like, I don't know, maybe I'm looking into it too much, but you know what I'm saying? Like, why did they get 200 payments of $10 in one night and they don't even have a website? Like, what is this guy selling? Wouldn't that raise a red flag as PayPal? You would think.
Well, at some point. I think. They do 40 million in transactions every day or something like that, so it would take a while to catch on. I think, at some point they maybe would get ratted out, or somebody would look into it. It could just take a while. It could take – I think the Raz kind of big thing is only – it's been less than a year. It's really been about six, eight months here where it's kind of been going on. It could take quite a long time. But I wouldn't want to be doing it. If PayPal looks into it, I wouldn't want to be doing them. Because they could take a lot of action. They could take all the fees that they were supposed to get from you. They could just wipe you out if they wanted to.
Well, also, here's another
why couldn't they?
The last question for you guys on this subject. So we get a W-2 every year because we do business with PayPal. So what happens – what happens with all gift payments? Do they not send you a W-2 at that point?
I don't think, actually, you know what, I think I can answer this. They don't, because I was subleasing my practice studio at one point, and the person who was renting it from me was gifting me the payments through PayPal every month.
Gotcha.
He was gifting me the rent. So, and that happened for about a year, and I would get maybe $175, $200 a month to sublease the studio, the practice studio. And I never got a tax form from PayPal. So I don't think they do account for gift payments.
So then you're, I mean, then you're obviously approaching tax evasion at that point too. So you're throwing that on there because they're not paying taxes on the money they're earning, so to speak. That's another.
Yeah, I mean,
So not only you got to worry about PayPal. I mean, not you personally, because you,
I wasn't.
I'm saying.
I wasn't avoiding anything.
No, I'm saying, like, say a Razor does. I think it's got to be 20,000. That's what Donovan says. I think it's got to be a 1099 if it's over 20,000. So say somebody does $20,000 in gift payment. Maybe no one does that, but $20,000 in gift payments a year. That's just tax free now. You don't have to pay Uncle Sam.
Well, and a good point. But I also have another. And I know we're going off on this topic, whatever it is, what it is. But so you have a platform, and you have one person doing these Razzes, and they're basically providing this service to allow people to sell cards, and they're using whatever their portal to do it. Who is going to get in trouble? Probably not the guy who is hosting these Razzes.
Right.
He's not doing anything. He probably has he or she has the least amount of transactions probably out of everybody in their room.
Right.
So, I mean, but they are facilitating it. So shouldn't they have to take on some of the blame or some of the responsibility? Or let's say said person doesn't send a card to somebody else. Where's the recourse? Should it go through the host who's hosting it? Host probably is going to be like, well, not my deal. I didn't sell you the card.
I hear what you're saying there. Yeah, I don't know whose responsibility, but actually I'm kind of further thinking the whole W-2 thing, and I guess the person would still have to pay W-2 when they sell the card on eBay, because there's no way around that. So I guess unless the person keeps all the cards or re-razzes it 100%. At some point along the line of this chain of razzing and re-razzing, somebody's going to put it on eBay and sell it. So I think at that point, that's where the taxes come out. So I guess at one point there is a chain in the link that does have to pay taxes on this transaction, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a crazy. I've seen the same like group of cards get re-razzed. And I don't even think they actually – I mean, I think five or six people would win them, and they actually would never have the card in hand.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. It's a crazy concept.
Like, I don't know. It is what it is. I mean, I'm probably going to get hated on for even bringing it up, but –
No, I think we constructively criticize that. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's illegal, but I also see the fact that some people – like it, and you know, if you're an adult and you want to spend your money, that's fine. I mean, it's just, I guess it's like a buyer beware and make sure your T's are crossed, your I's are dotted type thing, I guess.
Yeah,
so
but there's certain laws in place that are here that everybody has to abide by, and it kind of protects us as a society, and that's just the way life is.
Yes.
It being fair or it not being fair, it doesn't matter. Everybody has to play by the same rules. So if it's illegal, it's illegal for everybody. I don't care if it's your money and you think that you can do whatever you want with it. If it's illegal activity, you can't do it.
Right.
I don't know. I'm a jerk, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, can't sell drugs. It's the same thing. I mean, there's a lot of people that
like
drugs out there.
Yeah, if I can go out and just, like, razz off, if I wanted to be a drug dealer and I was like, you know what, I have a new platform to sell my drugs, I'm going to go ahead and razz them off. You're going to be able to get drugs for 10% of the price. I'd probably have a huge business. Or if I can just go house to house or just hang out at, like, bars and sell drugs. I mean, there's like, you can't sell drugs. Like, it's illegal.
My father's a drug dealer.
Wow, that must have been a shit.
It ruined his life.
That must have been shitty.
Man, the thing is, I can tell you were sitting here scrolling through that for that drop. Because I'm all, oh, there's silence. There must be a drop coming soon.
Yeah, I was waiting. You know, I was listening to the drops that we never use, and I was like, there's got to be an opportunity to play that one. So, but anyway, I wanted to we're gonna talk about museum baseball and National Treasures coming up. But I did hear talking about group breakers. Panini Roundtable, I guess Panini met with some distributors, this is allegedly, and they're thinking about proposing idea that they're going to charge more to a group breaker that doesn't have a shop. So I think it's supposed to be like 7% more. That's what I heard. They're proposing that. So if you don't have a shop, they're going to charge you more. I don't know if this is an effort to either push people to get a shop or it's trying to help out the card shops one way or the other. I mean, Ryan, what do you think about them charging more for somebody that doesn't have a shop?
Oh man. I don't know. I don't get it. It's, you know, this probably all came from literally 4 or 5 card shop owners. And I would name them, but I don't want to do that. I don't know. Why cater to that small audience? When I had my card shop, the last thing on my mind was forums, group breaks, YouTubers. I could care less. I was trying to get people from Turlock, California, Modesto, that area to come to my shop. I could give a crap about some guy doing YouTube breaks. And they were doing them at that time. It was more of the personal boxes like Cards Infinity and stuff like that. You know, that was going. I thought it was cool. I would watch them. I'd be like, oh, this is really cool. These guys are doing this. Man, I wish I had more time and maybe I should do this too. It's literally 3 or 4 hobby shops who are like, oh, we have a shop, we should get boxes less than breakers. Why? Because you have a shop?
Yeah, right.
You know, why? So what? You're selling to some guy in Colorado. You're selling to some guy in Los Angeles. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's really poor. I'm sure they're going to go through with it because these guys kind of, you know, they're pretty loud and for some reason feel like, you know, everything should be catered to the hobby shop. Why doesn't Panini Tops and all these provide more resources for a store to do it, provide more kind of tax information, business license information, buying direct should be easier. I think we should be encouraging people to start businesses, whether it's online or if you want to start a shop, that's fine. But it just seems like this is kind of like discouraging people and kind of, you know, shutting people percent. I mean, that's not going to make a big difference either way, but it just doesn't seem fair. Because this is all literally coming from 3 or 4 hobby shops. It's not every single hobby shop. I guarantee you could go around. I could go around to hobby shops in my area, and maybe I'll do that, and I'll ask them. I'll be like, hey, do you think group breakers should pay 7% more for their product? These guys will probably look at me like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. What is a group break? Like, literally, a lot of the hobby shops I've been, they'd look at me and be like, what is a group break? What are you talking about? They wouldn't even have any idea what it is. So this all comes from, you know, some guys getting together at the little industry butt slap summit, you know what I mean, and kind of saying, oh, we should pay less. It's ridiculous. So I don't know. I mean,
the butt slap
conference. You know what I'm saying? So that's what this all comes from, and it just, to me, it kind of discourages business. And we're already in an industry that's not exactly thriving. And another reason to shut out rafflers because it just gives the whole thing a bad name. So we're, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me to be discouraging people from starting a legitimate group break, whatever, personal box, whatever you want to do. Go ahead. Give it a shot.
Yeah.
Why not? Provide tools for that. And if you want to open a shop, okay. Maybe there'll be some incentives, but every product, 7% off, it's just, I don't know, seems crazy.
I don't know. It just seems like maybe I haven't been in this industry long enough, but I just think, you know, I've been selling for, well, I guess that's what we do is sell, for, you know, 3-4 years now. And, you know, the guys that I see that are continually, like, shops and stuff that are doing well are the guys that have passion, that still have that fire. It's the guys that have become complacent that I see at the industry summit, that I see at card shows, the guys that have become complacent and they just complain about their business and why they've lost their business, and they don't initiate new ideas or try to have, like, trading night or something to kind of stir up something to get people back in the shop or sell online or start your own group break. You have the inventory there. Those are the guys that just complain. They don't have that fire anymore. They don't have that passion. And I think if you have that passion, that's like 90% of it, is having that passion, that willingness to make it happen, to love what you do. And I don't think these guys love what they do anymore, and they want to complain and find reasons. Is the 7% going to help them? No, it's not going to help them. Is 50% going to help them? Probably not. It's that they need to love what they do, love their customers, and enjoy doing it, and kind of come up with new ideas and try new things, and they don't do that. And that's just, well, my piece.
I have a couple things about this. One, I think Panini's looking at their books and going, what area are we really thriving in? Where is most of our product going to? Which avenue? And they're like, group breaking. Okay, thriving portion of majority of our stuff is going in these avenues. And this, let's charge them 7% more. They're doing so well that they're just still going to buy it anyway. So we're going to go ahead and do that and have them pay the extra 7%. We can make more money, and we can also at the same time tell our hobby shops that are complaining about group breaks that, hey, we're looking out for you guys because we're giving you a 7% discount. Because
right.
We could be charging you group break price. That's the first thing.
See, now, I would be all for, like, a chain of command. Like, I don't even know if that's the correct way to do it. Like, if some guy starts off and it's, like, his first year and, like, maybe charge him 7% more, but then once he gets established and you see he's going to be there for long term, then he shouldn't have to pay 7% more.
Yeah,
there's no way to police it. Yeah, I agree.
No way to police that. And there's too many different variables that go into that. You can play favoritism. There's a million different ways that system will be flawed. Another thing is, and Ryan knows this, and I'm going to be a little sarcastic right now, but thank God there's so much margin in sports cards where they can do this. I mean, thank God. If anybody doesn't know, if you sell a box of cards and you're going to be competitive with eBay and competitive with the bigger online retailers, you're lucky if you make 10% margin. Which I know other industries that's ridiculous. That's a low margin. And
yeah,
pulling 7% of that, and then you count in PayPal fees or merchant service fees and shipping, you will never make money.
Right.
You will not make money if you're trying to. I mean, that is, I don't think they're actually looking at that as a whole and go, well, what we're going to do is we're going to shoot our biggest avenue for opening up these products and getting our name out there, because you gotta remember, group breaking is a great free marketing avenue for these manufacturers. It's like literally a 2-hour commercial of their product being open on camera, and that people will watch it, and there's a chance that people may go buy retail versions of that product. They may go to their hobby shop and buy a box for themselves or a couple packs. It may get people into the hobby that haven't been into the hobby for 10 years, and they're coming back,
right,
and they're like, I didn't know there was autographs. I didn't know there was memorabilia in cards. I didn't know they put swatches. I didn't know they put bat relics. I didn't know this stuff. So it's growing their brand, and I don't know if it's a great idea to kind of alienate the people who are promoting and marketing your brand for free.
Yeah, I mean, well, we got a shop, so, I mean, it wasn't because of this. It was because of other things, and you, frankly, we just wanted to try out a shop, so that's why we got a shop. But, you know, we got one. So, and I've seen other breakers get them, too. So, I mean, maybe they're seeing that trend, and they're thinking, oh, well, we'll get these guys to do this. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process is. We'll see if this goes into effect.
But I mean, I don't know how having a shop benefits the manufacturer.
I don't know either. Unless they just really want their products to be tangible, you know, it's an event. I don't know. But I wanted to get on the topic of. I wanted to get on a good topic of not that wasn't a good topic, because that was a good topic too. They've all been great topics. 2013 National Treasures Football came out, and I don't think we expected much from it. And honestly, I think they hit a home run with it. They really did. I think they really did a good job with what they had with the rookie prices of this year's 2013 football class not really being where we wanted it to be. I mean, I guess it's a shocker, right? But I think they did a really good job with what they mixed in, some of the newer innovations like the laces out, like the hats off, you know, more one-of-ones. I don't know if it diluted the one-of-one market, but, you know, a good amount of one-of-ones. I mean, it's crazy because this stuff is readily available and everybody's breaking it and everybody's selling it. So it's crazy. It's a great product. It's good value. It's the right price point. It's the right amount of cards. And I just got to say, props to Panini on NT. NT Football, National Treasures.
That's funny because when we did the preview at the summit, what did Ryan call it? The butt slap summit, which would be pretty wild summit right there, you know.
Well, that stuff kind of does happen at the ABN Awards in Vegas, so he's not too far off, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I love one of those, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe I do.
No, I mean, the preview, when we saw the preview, I had mixed feelings about it. I'm like, I don't know how this product's going to be. And plus, I got to say, like, I didn't have high expectations based on what's happened pretty much with all the releases this year, minus a couple. Spectra was good. Museum Collection Football was good. And there was a couple decent ones in there. I mean, I'm not going to say they were all bad. I'm not going to say they were all good, but there were some decent ones in there. And after seeing the preview, I was like, I don't know. I think it's going to be okay. I don't think it's going to go down in price. I didn't think it was going to go up in price. And I didn't think people were going to be opening this much of it. I think they still made about the same amount as they did last year, maybe the year before that. But I think the distributors kind of held on to it. And they knew that they were going to be able to sell it at some point, but the pre-order numbers weren't there. And I think that's why you saw so many preview boxes of it 2 to 3 weeks before release.
Right.
They were trying to get people interested in it. They knew distributors were holding on to tons of cases because they were not spoken for, because people backed off. Nobody was going to call up their distributor and go, I want 25 cases of National Treasures.
Right.
No, it was going to be like, I want a case and a half of National Treasures. I think everybody's pre-order numbers were way lower than obviously 2012.
Yeah.
So that's why you see it readily available. Distributors have tons of it. I don't think Panini made any less of it, but overall the product is really nice. I like how they did the Nike swoosh memorabilia pieces. Not a huge fan of the laces out after I saw them in person. They're a little much. Looks like the card is, like, just going to just rip and burst with a lot of football in there. Logoed football, which I think they've had in previous years, where they have the logo and the signature. That card design is sick. I like that. The NFL shield on the ball, and then the auto on the ball. I like that design. That's a good design. The RPAs look good. Tons of Hall of Fame autos and veteran autos. A lot of Haloti Ngata. You wouldn't think the Ravens are stacked in it, which is weird because the Ravens haven't had too many rookies in the last couple of years. So, overall, good value, better than expected.
I think it broke down to they packed out the cases a lot better. I think they finally, and maybe they have been doing this in other products, but I think they finally realized, okay, well, this sells, this doesn't sell, so every case, at the very least, even a weak case, should have an X amount of these, value-wise. I think they figured that out, and you can kind of see it because you're getting vets. You're getting almost a one-on-one per case. Maybe not every case, but it's close. You're getting good stuff. And I mean, the secondary market's pretty good. I mean, I have one-on-one Emmett Smith, Colossal NFL Shield, best offer accepted, $5,000. Peyton Manning, NFL Shield, one-on-one, $1,700. I mean, Peyton Manning's done a lot of autos this year. 1-of-1 NFL Shield sold for $1,700. Mike Glennon, 1-of-1, sold for $1,500. Andrew Luck, Nike Swish, 1-of-1, sold for $1,500. Russell Wilson, $1,500. So Eddie Lacy, 1-of-2, sold for $1,100. Tom Brady, they got Tom Brady in here. We haven't pulled any yet, but they have Tom Brady patch autos and regular autos. And that was a kind of a much-needed area for collectors. There's Tom Brady's been redemptions and everything. So apparently they got some Tom Brady stuff. A 1-of-10 sticker out of Tom Brady, $1,000. So,
wow.
Yeah. A Manti Te'o Jr. Seau dual patch, 1-of-1, $1,500. They got cut autos of Walter Payton.
Wow.
I mean, overall, they have actually an RPA of Tom Brady in there that sold for $1,300. So, not a rookie patch auto, I guess just a patch auto, be a PA, not an RPA. But, yeah, I mean, they did the best job that they could. The complaints I heard in the room was there's too much sticker autos, but I honestly would rather have a sticker auto than a redemption. So there is redemptions in the set, but it's not glaring, not glaringly amount of redemptions. I don't think many rookies have redemptions in there. So I think they did a really good job. I give a hats off to them, no pun intended. Laces out. The Panini.
They scored a touchdown with that product.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a field goal, a touchdown. So good job. I like that product. We're gonna be doing more of it and stuff, and I'm not ashamed to say I'm doing more of it. It's not mixer material. You can do it by the case. We actually did I didn't even tell you this. We did a draft last night, a live draft. 8 people drafted 4 teams. We did a live draft, and it was kind of a blast. People got the team they want, and then 8 people, even the 8th pick got a top 8 team, obviously. That was pretty fun. We did that last night. We'll probably do that again.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah. So instead of doing divisions, we said, draft your team.
First pick was the Rams.
No, Packers. Packers were the first pick.
Oof. I would have gone Rams.
Let's see where the Rams did go. Let's see. They went 18th.
You're kidding.
No, they went 7th. but the Niners went 5th, so winning.
Wow, really?
It went Packers, Bills, Seahawks, Broncos, Niners, Steelers, Rams, Chiefs.
The Chiefs, huh?
Yep. And actually did pretty well.
Speaking of redemptions, Quentin Patton is a redemption in that product.
Oh, is he? Okay, he's probably the only rookie that I can think of then.
Yeah, he's busy. He has things that he has to do in Florida, like illegal things, get in trouble.
He'll be all right. Beezy's just trying to make money out there, man. That's what's going on. Just trying to get some cash.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah. But I'll go ahead and move on to 2014 Museum Baseball Review. I don't know if there's a lot that really needs to be said about it. I mean, it's pretty much the same as it has been. I don't really think too many additions to it. I think it's all pretty much the same. It breaks pretty well. I mean, there's some guys in there that are, you know, shouldn't be in there, but that's like anything. But there's also a lot of guys that should be in there, and there's bat knobs, bat plates. Well, maybe not bat knobs, but bat plates, cut autos, dual autos. So it's a good product. I think it's a good product. I don't say it's a home run NT was, but it's a good product.
NT was a touchdown, not a home run. If this product was really good, it would be a home run. It's a baseball product.
That's true. Got to get my terminology correct there.
That's
so funny. The last time I heard that, I laughed so hard I fell off my dinosaur.
Nice. No, a lot of Reds.
Yeah.
A lot of catchers.
Yeah.
If you collect catchers, you definitely want to look into museum collection baseball. If you're
if the catcher
is your PC type deal. And then they have two cases. You have one jumbo relic auto that's numbered to 10 or less, and you have one framed on card auto that is numbered, I think, 15 or less, I think.
Yeah, there's a 15, there's a 10, and there's a 5, and then there might be a 101.
And the number to 10 jumbo relics seem to be, most of them seem to be one color. But we have pulled a couple multicolor, number to 5. But overall, I mean, they got Tony Gwynn in there. They got Ozzie Smith. They have a good checklist. Good product. You know what they didn't do was change up the base design at all.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same base design.
Yeah, it is.
But overall, I think it's actually done pretty well in the secondary market.
No, it's gone down. But, I mean, as far as from a break standpoint, people seem to love it. I think it's a great product to be digested as a break. I guess it's not a bad personal box at $199 with four hits and chance at a. I mean, they got all the legends in there, and they got, you know, 101 patches and bat plates and number to 5-6 patches. So there's a lot of value to be had in there. Secondary market for the cards is doing well. Yes.
What do they say? 15% down's the new up. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I haven't heard that, but I'll go with that one. I like that. Ryan, what do you think about Prizm World Cup Soccer? I mean, what do you? They're hyping it. You know, they got us to buy three cases. I'm actually excited to watch the World Cup this year. How do you think the cards are going to translate into the market?
I actually think they'll do well. Between the stickers, which is really popular, where Panini makes a lot of money internationally and probably even in the United States on that. I actually think the Prizm, I was looking at, it looks like they've confirmed about 50 or 60 people that are going to sign, like Pele, Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, people, Alexei Lawless. I don't watch soccer that much, but I kept going through some of the names. I was like, oh, yeah, I recognize that name. I actually think the cards are going to do really, really well. I don't know how you're going to do a break with it, or if that'll, you know, go over well. But I think you could almost, I don't know what the boxes cost, you could almost rip and flip that stuff. Because I think there's going to be a lot of demand for the parallel cards. I think random base cards or, you know, the blue prism, some of those are going to sell for $10, $20, I think. It's obviously just a really popular event. They've never really had, aside from the stickers and maybe a couple of the things that Topps did, the gold premiere or whatever they came out with, I think it was in December, it was a couple hundred bucks a box, I think. There really hasn't been anything like that for soccer, the high-end autographs, you know. We're so used to that with baseball, basketball, football, hockey and stuff. But there really isn't a whole lot of that for soccer, and I think the appetite will be wet for that. People have money. I think a lot of the stuff will be going overseas. I personally think it'll do it should do, I think it should do well. You know, whether it's going to sky up in price, I don't know. I think the single cards on eBay are going to do pretty well. And if you could get enough exposure for it, I think the breaks, I think you could do a break. It looks like they're going to have all the 32 teams that are going to be represented.
Yep.
So you could sell all 32 spots. There's a 200-card base set. So it's a big enough base set where they're going to have, you know, enough you know, cards of all the players and stuff. So I, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think it could do well. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah, we're actually doing it by World Cup group. So we've done it. We're doing a case that way. So we're just seeing. We actually sold two divisions already, but there's eight groups, and each group has four teams because Martin, props to Martin, thank you for helping me out here, is, you know, like some of the teams I didn't know, like, you know, Cameroon, who they got, you know. So I figured we'd lump them together because there's at least one really collectible team in each group, you know, like Brazil's in Group A, Australia's in Group B with Chile, Italy's in Group D, you know, so, you know, and there's Messi in there and stuff. So I think it's going to go over well. The only thing is what people are kind of constructively criticizing it is saying they're not promising one auto per box. So they're saying that the autos are going to fall maybe like 1 and 2 or 1 and 3, that you may only get like 7 autos a case. So
I think a lot of the money, a lot of the resale value is going to be in the parallels.
Yeah.
So
I don't mind the idea of they're scarcifying these autos, especially entering in the market like this. I'm glad they're doing this and not doing like jumbo and give you 4 autos and then it's just muddied down. I think, you know, if they get Messi in there and he's going to be hard enough to pull, I mean, that could be a base auto of Messi could go for maybe $1,000. It's going to be the first auto. I searched eBay. You can't find a card of Messi. There's no card of him. There's Ronaldo. There's Pele. But there's no Messi, who I go to soccer tournaments because my wife's 11-year-old brother is in a competitive soccer team. Everybody wears a Messi jersey. I mean, this guy is huge. So gold parallels of Messi, and if they get autos of him, it's going to be insane.
They're really setting it up, and I'm not sure what they're going to be doing, but Prism is like a perfect – it's like a perfect like fake base design for this. They're not going to like overproduce the autos. It's going to have a lot of value with the parallels. It's coming out right before the World Cup. Now, if after the World Cup, when it ends, if they can do like a higher end set, like an NT type, where it's just all like really nice memorabilia and on card autos and like a higher end price point and like a lot more hits, I think that would be a great idea. And really only make two products. Make one product that is a lot of base, parallels, and scarce when it comes to the autos, and then make one high-end product where it's really nice prime memorabilia and on-card autos. And you do that after the World Cup.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, even the top stuff did decent when it came out. I mean, that Ronaldo's and Pele's are, you know, Ronaldo's auto is like $400 out of there. So I think if they're going to do soccer, this is the right time to debut this kind of product. I mean, World Cup, even a casual fan that doesn't, like myself, watches soccer. So, you know, it's going to be – it should pop. So we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the gold sell a lot more than the autos. I think that's going to be the key. Or even a parallel number to 199. I think people are going to say, screw the autos, let's go after these golds and stuff.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be good.
It's going to be good. So, I mean, I think that pretty much sums up the show. I think we only got about 5 minutes left. Anything else you guys want to add to the show or anything like that? Or?
Hey, Ryan, did you pick up any Oregon Cal tickets?
They were too expensive. They were priced like Niner tickets, and I could get second row wherever I wanted, but they were priced like Niner tickets, and I didn't see the value there. If Cal was better, I could see it, and Oregon could be a national championship team, but I didn't see it. I know there's going to be a lot of student tickets that get released that are probably going to get dumped because the students, I think, get them at a really reduced rate, and so
yeah. They'll
probably dump those. The Earthquakes game, because they were like $60, I saw there was maybe some room there. But with the Cal Oregon, it was like $115 a pop wherever you were, and it didn't make sense. I thought.
Yeah, and I thought the same thing. I was like, if Oregon was playing Stanford, I would have said absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be different. Yeah.
But Cal's pretty bad right now, and I mean, there's a lot of Oregon fans in like the Bay Area, and I would say I know it's like going to be considered, I think, a Cal home game. Would not surprise me if there's 70% Oregon fans in that place.
Oh, for sure.
There's a lot of Oregon fans in this area. So I thought about from that standpoint. I'm like, well, maybe Oregon fans coming down from Oregon might be into buying tickets. But yeah, I didn't know how much they were. I actually didn't even do research and see how much they were. But at $115 a pop, that's kind of crazy for a Stanford. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the earthquake tickets, the lowest you can get are like 90 in the section I bought. So those seem to be doing pretty well. First event for you guys listening out there, first event at the new Levi Niner Stadium is a San Jose Earthquakes game. So Seattle Sounders against the San Jose Earthquakes. And I actually bought 4 tickets, but I probably won't be able to go. So I'm looking at when the prime opportunity is to sell. I know I'm one of those guys. And I'm looking at it going, oh, okay, it looks like they're going up. So much as I'd like to go, it's going to be right around the time where my baby's being born, so I probably won't be able to go. And so we're going to put those up on StubHub at some point. But I'm looking, it's like crazy. So they're definitely going up.
Yeah, and then they have, well, WrestleMania is not going to be for a while, but I know that's going to be there. And, yeah, a couple other events coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. I can't wait to go to a game. I requested 4 parking lot tickets, but we'll see how much they allocate to us. So, that should be interesting. But I think that pretty much sums up the show. Make sure you guys check out sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. We got a couple breaks tomorrow with National Treasures that we just reviewed, Museum that we just reviewed, and a pretty nice basketball mixer with some high-end Exquisite Immaculate. And we also have our 36-box break of baseball on Friday. We're trying it with baseball. We've been doing it with football. 36 boxes. All the years of tribute, Sterling's. There's 260-something hits in the break. So it's going to be a pretty exciting 2 to 3 hour break. A lot of boxes. Should be pretty fun. Use the code MOJOBREAK. Save 10% off on any team style. Other than that, I think we're out for the night. It's good being back, and we'll try to get this on a regular schedule. Thank you guys for tuning in, and those that downloaded the podcast on iTunes, thank you guys as well. Make sure you follow us at Card Radio Live, and we'll be back again. See you guys later.
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 Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.